analysis rushed Israel-Lebanon talks may amount to little more than a political exercise. There seems to be a gap between Benjamin Netanyahu's declarations on a possible peace agreement with Lebanon and the circumstances under which they were made. American and international pressure to halt strikes in Lebanon to allow talks between the United States and Iran to move forward. By Liza Rozovsky. Nothing changes at the last minute. Historic talks between Israel and Lebanon are scheduled to open Tuesday in Washington, with the United States serving as mediator. Diplomats at various levels on both sides participated in at least two meetings last December at the UN Peacekeeping Force in southern Lebanon, UNIFIL, headquarters in the Lebanese town of Nakura, near the border with Israel. But this will be the first time since the 1980s that the two sides hold open negotiations with the stated goal of reaching a diplomatic arrangement, and according to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, even a peace agreement. The previous agreement, which was meant to formally end the state of war between the two countries, was signed on May 17, 1983, following negotiations led by David Kimchi, then Director General of Israel's Foreign Ministry, and Lebanese diplomat Antoine Fattal. The agreement was ratified by Lebanon's parliament but never implemented, in part due to opposition from Syria, which at the time controlled large parts of Lebanon and was the dominant power there. The regional circumstances today are different. Syria is no longer able, or particularly interested, in blocking an agreement between Israel and Lebanon. Yet there are striking similarities between the situation that led to the 1983 agreement and the current one. At the time, Israel sought to prevent attacks on its territory by the Palestine Liberation Organization, which controlled southern Lebanon. Today, Israel's objective is to prevent rocket fire from Hezbollah. Lebanon's government then demanded an Israeli withdrawal from its territory, just as it does now. But while the 1983 agreement was never implemented, it was at least signed. Now, sources familiar with the matter who spoke with Haaretz expressed deep pessimism about the chances of meaningful progress in the upcoming talks. The Lebanese delegation will be led by Lebanon's ambassador to Washington, Nada Hamada Muawad. She will be joined by two former ambassadors to the United States, Simon Karam, who served in the 1990s and also took part in the Nakura talks last December, and Antoine Shadid, who served as ambassador in Washington from 2007 to 2016. According to a source familiar with the matter, both Karam and Shadid are figures who are well regarded by the Americans. The Israeli delegation will be led by Israel's ambassador to the United States, Yehiel Leiter, who has little diplomatic experience. He will be joined by representatives of Israel's National Security Council. Behind the scenes, however, Strategic Affairs Minister Ron Dermer is said to be overseeing the effort. Lost in translation, the nature of the process itself remains unclear. More precisely, there appears to be a large gap between Netanyahu's declarations, echoed by Leiter, that the talks are meant to lead to a peace agreement, and the circumstances under which those declarations were made. Heavy American and international pressure to halt the fighting in Lebanon in order to allow negotiations between the United States and Iran, mediated by Pakistan, to move forward. That followed repeated Lebanese messages during the war, conveyed through Cyprus, urging Israel to halt the fighting and enter negotiations, according to a source familiar with the details. A diplomatic source said Lebanon had also tried to initiate talks through France in the weeks leading up to the war with Iran. The chain of events that led to Netanyahu's dramatic announcement of negotiations began with a nighttime declaration by Pakistan that the ceasefire reached between the United States, Israel, and Iran also applied to Lebanon. The statement caused confusion in the Prime Minister's office. Initially, Israeli officials signaled that the ceasefire indeed applied to Lebanon, but within hours the office issued a statement denying that this was the case. When officials in Washington responded later that morning, the White House formally backed Israel's position. At the same time, however, the United States began exerting significant pressure, openly, to restrain Israeli military activity in Lebanon even without declaring a formal ceasefire. For reasons that remain unclear, both Iran and Pakistan were convinced that Lebanon was included in the ceasefire arrangement. Whether something was lost in translation, whether this reflected wishful thinking in Tehran and Islamabad, or whether the United States initially signaled something different while pushing to secure a ceasefire is still unknown. Iran initially threatened not to attend the negotiations in Islamabad unless a ceasefire was declared in Lebanon. Ultimately, however, officials appear to have settled for a halt in Israeli strikes in Beirut and a broader reduction of Israeli military activity. A similar misunderstanding emerged over the weekend between Israel and Lebanon, beginning with a phone call meant to prepare for the Washington talks. After the call between the Israeli, Lebanese, and American ambassadors, the Lebanese presidency announced that the sides would discuss a ceasefire on Tuesday along with a timetable for launching negotiations. Ambassador Leiter quickly issued a statement denying the Lebanese version. According to him, Israel agreed to meet in order to advance a peace agreement but did not agree to discuss a ceasefire. Whether this discrepancy resulted from an innocent misunderstanding, a lack of preparation, or deliberate ambiguity on one or both sides is unclear. But the episode may reflect the degree of improvisation underlying Israel's move, and perhaps its real objective, buying time while Washington pursued negotiations with Iran, while Netanyahu sought to separate the Iranian arena from the Lebanese one and allow a reduction in hostilities without formally declaring a ceasefire. Political exercise or breakthrough? In any case, the initial positions of the two sides appear far apart, raising doubts about whether the talks can advance beyond Tuesday's introductory meeting. From Israel's perspective, the central issues on the agenda are the disarmament of Hezbollah and the severing of symbolic and economic ties between Lebanon and Iran, including, for example, the unimplemented expulsion of Iran's ambassador to Beirut. But according to a source familiar with the contacts, the Lebanese delegation has no real mandate to discuss Hezbollah's disarmament. That source, along with another Lebanese source who spoke with Haaretz, said Lebanon's government could only engage Hezbollah on the issue if it first presented the Lebanese public with tangible achievements in negotiations with Israel. This reflects Lebanon's familiar chicken and egg dilemma. According to the source, Hezbollah might agree, under certain conditions, to place its activities under the supervision of the Lebanese army. The most likely condition would be an Israeli withdrawal from Lebanese territory. "Let's be realistic," said the Lebanese source. "Israel will not withdraw from Lebanon while Hezbollah remains armed." Still, he argued, the dilemma has a potential solution if Israel signals during negotiations that it is prepared to fully withdraw from Lebanon and allow residents of southern Lebanon to return to their homes in exchange for Hezbollah's disarmament. The source said the question of Hezbollah's disarmament is closely tied to its political base. As long as Israel maintains a presence in Lebanese territory and Hezbollah is viewed as the force resisting it, residents of southern Lebanon are likely to continue supporting the group. That support could shift, however, if people come to believe Hezbollah itself is preventing their return home. He noted that something similar had happened before. Lebanese communities that once supported the Palestine Liberation Organization eventually turned against it. In any case, the Lebanese source argued that Hezbollah's disarmament should not be tied directly to negotiations with Israel but should instead emerge as an internal Lebanese process. If Lebanon's government achieves success in negotiations with Israel, that could give it the political legitimacy to reach such an agreement and enforce it. This approach, however, runs counter to Israel's agenda ahead of the talks, which calls for Hezbollah's disarmament as a first step. It also clashes with Israel's public statements. Defense Minister Israel Katz, along with briefings from the Israel Defense Forces, has spoken about destroying once and for all the houses in Lebanese villages near the border. Statements about establishing a security buffer in southern Lebanon and maintaining Israeli military control up to the Litani River until the threat is removed raise a broader question. Is this a bargaining position that Israel might be willing to compromise on during negotiations? Or do Netanyahu and his allies remain committed to an older strategic concept, that Israel must surround itself with security zones, effectively zones of occupation, on multiple fronts? If the latter proves true, a highly plausible scenario, the rushed launch of negotiations will remain little more than a political exercise, rather than the start of a historic breakthrough.